This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. It's Monday, the 12th of May, 2025. I'm Alec Hogg. Here's your BizNews briefing. High-tech South African invention born at the nuclear enrichment facility at Pelindaba. I know if you live in Johannesburg, Pretoria, anywhere around there, you would have driven past Pelindaba many times. Well, it has listed on NASDAQ and is about to list on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. The company's name is ASP Isotopes, and I caught up with the chief executive, Paul Mann, on Friday. Paul is a Cambridge University engineering graduate, chemical engineer, and he found this company in South Africa, which was in business rescue. A bunch of scientists were running it. They weren't able to commercialize it in the global environment. Paul, who has worked on Wall Street and is was very senior as an investment banker on some of the big companies, Morgan Stanley and so on, he decided to give up that career, put in his lot with the South African scientists. And, well, $100 million and 4 years later, they're now on the verge of some pretty exciting stuff, which we'll talk about in a moment as well. But the big thing, I guess, is what the heck are isotopes and what does this business do? Let's just have a very short clip on that before we go into the big news story.
Silicon has three isotopes, 28, 29, and 30. And the 29 isotope does not conduct electricity. And so, you know, if you can remove that 29 isotope, the silicon you have increases in conductivity thousands of fold. It also transmits heat more efficiently as well. And so, you know, when you think about a silicon, which often you find on a beach and sand, you know, a kilo of silicon, normal silicon, is probably $1 a kilo. When we strip out the 29 isotope and just have pure 28, you know, it's $500,000 a kilo. So, you know, we take very basic chemicals and convert them to very special materials the world needs or have very specific applications for. Well, that's kind of what we do. It's good.
And the process of going through it is, of course, where the secret lies. Now, last time we spoke, you explained that centrifuge, in other words, spinning cylinders, is what most of the world uses, and indeed the Russians, who are the leaders in this technology by terms of volume. But you'd invented something here, or you came across the guys in South Africa who'd invented it, where it's the gas that spins and the cylinder actually is static. Has anybody else been able to replicate what you have here?
They have not. And whether they've tried to or not, I don't know, but they have not. And listen, yeah, centrifuges are great for enriching uranium, very good. But they're not very good at enriching a lot of other isotopes the world may need. And so things like silicon-28, carbon-14, chlorine-37, you know, they're really ideally suited towards our type of centrifuge. Now, we could build a centrifuge as well, like Russia has got. It's not challenging technology to build, but we, you know, we like our technology for the isotopes we're enriching.
Interesting story, and with the potential listing on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, it's got an investment angle as well. In fact, today's program, you're going to hear a few companies that you might be thinking of doing some more research into to perhaps investing in. So it's a little unusual in to our normal fare. But the news break here is that this company, ASP Isotopes, as you hear, South African engineers listed on NASDAQ, went from 32 cents to over $5 a share in the past 18 months or so. Well, when you see that kind of price action, you also get the naysayers. And in this case, there's a hedge fund business that put out a report to say they do not believe that ASP Isotopes is going to be able to enrich uranium. It is, it's really not a story that they like, and you should sell the shares. So I mentioned that to Paul Mann in the course of our interview last week. And what was quite interesting was that he says it's not on their plan at the moment. They're going to start delivering their new isotopes, and I think now we know what that's all about. But there is a huge potential for South Africa down the line in exactly this area. Again, let's get close to what Paul means by that.
Now, we'd like to enrich uranium in South Africa. And we're talking to the government. We've signed an MOU with Nexa to build a facility up at Pelindaba, and we've signed a term sheet with Tela Power, when we get definitive agreements, we'll likely invest in the facility at Pelindaba and take a long term and guarantee a long term offtake as well. So we're working hard to get through the regulatory permitting and what have you to be able to do this. It just takes a long time in uranium.
Who are those two names that you mentioned, Nexa and Tera Power?
So Tera Power is a next generation nuclear energy company founded by Bill Gates, who is still the chairman. And their goal is to dramatically lower the cost of nuclear power and the time it takes and the cost it takes to build a nuclear reactor. The problem is all these new reactors called SMR, small modular reactors, require a new form of uranium called HALEU, high-assay low-enriched uranium, and there is no Western supplier of that today. Nexa is a South African nuclear energy corporation, and they run Pelindaba, which is where South Africa did its enrichment back in the 70s and 80s, and they have the Safari reactor at that site, a nuclear reactor on that site, and produce a lot of the world's medical isotopes or radioactive medical isotopes from that site. And we think it's a great combination of the two to help try and solve a global supply chain problem. So our goal is to build a huge plant here in Pelindaba, employ thousands of people, mobilize an entire domestic supply chain in South Africa, and using other people's money. And we're looking forward to doing it. I must say, we've had a great response from the government. I mean, the DEE, Department of Electricity and Energy, Minister Ramaphosa, has done a great job in terms of solving a lot of the country's energy problems or short-term energy problems. And, you know, it's been nothing but, the government's been nothing but supportive of what we're doing. We're very thankful for the government.
Isn't that a nice, good news story to start your Monday with? Well, it is. I like it. And certainly, it does appear that we're starting to play to our strengths. Even the government is doing that. And well done to Sputla Ramaphosa for the support that he's giving to commercializing some of those unique South African assets. Well, not such good news as far as the government's concerned is often highlighted on the Sunday show where Chris Steyn hosts Neil De Beer. And this Sunday was no different. Neil had quite a bit to say about the video, the viral video on the Deputy President Paul Mashatile's bodyguards beating up some South African citizens, some motorists, and getting a clean bill of health after the investigation. Neil's not impressed. I wonder if you are.
Well, still on the Deputy President, he had quite a good week. His VIP protection officers being acquitted of assault in an internal police disciplinary hearing, despite video evidence.
Chris, I will echo Mr. Ian Cameron's statement. The only problem is Mr. Cameron is bound by an oath and has been sworn in at Parliament. I have not been. So I can say this in public until maybe one day I enter the hallowed grounds of that tent. Thugs. Absolute thugs. There's no other way to describe them as a bunch of hooligans and thugs that have each been given a badge. Now, the first thing that Pop Crew does, which sounds like something that you take with a bit of salt and vinegar when you go to the cinema, but unfortunately, Pop Crew is one of the police unions of this country. Pop Crew, who is supposed to stand up for the rights of police, and obviously also to ensure that the public interest is served through the police, says that Mr. Ian Cameron must immediately be removed as the chairperson of the Police Portfolio Committee because he called them thugs. Well, they are thugs. They are nothing else as a couple of people that took their position and weaponized it, Chris. There's a video out there. They said that that video should not be used in evidence. I'd like to remind it and the people that, thank goodness, this is just an internal affair. As I understand it, there are still court cases that will come out where criminal charges will be put to them. But Chris, doesn't that again allude to the fact where Mr. Paul Mashatile, at a very famous BizNews conference, when a certain person got up at that conference and said to him, what are you going to do to clear your name? And he said, no, he will absolutely succumb to the internal parliamentary disciplinary processes. This is exactly the same. Why would one on one find each guilty when they are all one? So, Chris, it's shocking. It is a terrible shame. And I must tell you that this is not the conduct that we as citizens wish to have from police officers, but more the kind of ethos, honor, and dignity that should surround the person that is supposed to be the deputy president of this country. Hooligans and thugs, and you can put that on record.
It's on record, Neil. It certainly is. And the Sunday show is on BizNews TV on YouTube. Go and watch. It's required viewing and lots of fun as well. Well, there's still with politics a story that's been going for quite some time now, the decline and slide of Johannesburg and the politics around it, how the Democratic Alliance wanted at one stage to dissolve the city council. That was its drive. And the intention there was that dissolve the city council, let the people of Johannesburg vote again, and if they want to vote back the clowns who are destroying the place, well, fine, do it. And then they take it on their heads. But if there was a vote today, the DA would believes that the citizens of Johannesburg, the ratepayers of Johannesburg, would vote very differently to what they did in November 2021. However, they've changed tack. They weren't able to get the council dissolved. They're now going to try to get rid of the mayor of Johannesburg. And I spoke with Belinda Kayser, the head of the caucus of the DA in Joburg, about this and other issues. Again, it's on BizNews TV. You can go and pick up that full interview. But here's her reasoning on why the DA has changed tack, moved away from dissolving the council to a no-confidence motion in the mayor.
If we don't take action now, how many more decisions are going to be taken before 2026 that is going to plunge the city into more chaos and is going to cost the residents, the ratepayers, more money? Last week, we had to note loans that the mayor, loan reports that the mayor has brought into council 22 hours prior with information that we believe it's not complete, because we had so many questions about where's this document coming from? What does this mean? And saying it's for noting 22 hours prior. These are decisions that residents are going to pay interest on. And they are not seeing the service delivery on the ground. And we're saying if these kind of decisions are continuing until 2026 or prior to 2026, we are not going to have a city left that residents can actually call home and seeing what they are paying for, at least a little bit, seeing a little bit of what they're paying for. And that is why we brought it at this time.
Well, Belinda's on it, and let's see what comes of that. Moving internationally now, and the good news coming out of our partners at Bloomberg this morning is that the United States and China are getting closer to a deal on trade. Now, this is very important to South Africa. Our economy is 50%, half of our economy is reliant on either exports or imports. So what happens in global trade really means a lot to us here in this country. The Hong Kong-based correspondent of Bloomberg, Stephen Engel, reports on the very latest in the trade talks in Switzerland between China and Russia.
The two sides held in-depth exchanges on trade and economic issues of their respective concern. The atmosphere of the meeting was candid, in-depth, and constructive. The meeting achieved substantial progress and reached important consensus.
I'm happy to report that we made substantial progress between the United States and China in the very important trade talks. We will be giving details tomorrow. but I can tell you that the talks were productive.
Stephen Engel, our chief North Asia correspondent, is here with us. Both sides exuding positivity. Lack of details, but I think that's a good starting point.
Yeah, so I'm a stickler for details, so I'm waiting for that. And perhaps we're going to get that later. I would assume from Washington, D.C., Donald Trump would likely announce the various levels of significant progress. Yep. Both sides used that terminology. But what really stood out to me was when He Lifeng said not only significant progress, but he also said they reached important consensus. On what is the big question? Where did they find common ground in what has been a very fractious relationship, no doubt? Is it on fentanyl? Is it on rare earths exports? Is it on the level of tariffs that would be acceptable to both? We don't know, and maybe I'm getting, you know, the cart in front of the horse here. But it is good that they didn't have a first day of talks like they did in 2021 with the Biden administration meeting across the table in the Captain Hook Hotel in Anchorage, where essentially they aired grievances. And I'm sure they did. There was an airing of grievances in Switzerland as well. But the neutral ground helps, as well as without having the cameras to essentially allow grandstanding in front of the cameras to happen. So I think sitting down for two straight days, just airing their grievances, coming to some sort of consensus, as He Lifeng said, is a good starting point. Mm-hmm. What's next is the big question.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Well, tension does seem to be reducing there. What about between the Afrikaners and the ANC? Lots of tension there. The first refugees from South Africa have got themselves into the United States on the card of, being oppressed here in our country. Maybe they wanted to go anyway. Maybe they had jobs there. Maybe they really do feel oppressed. Whatever the situation is, we understand that there are thousands more who want to join them. And it's not surprising. Everybody in the world wants to go into the United States. Well, not everybody, but there's a long, long, long list of those who would love visas and green cards and getting into the most powerful economy in the world, legally that is. So it's not surprising that some Afrikaners are going there. But this is a topic that has raised the stakes in the unhappiness between Afrikaners and the ANC. Right now, Chris Steyn, my colleague, got hold of Leon Low, who is an Afrikaner, the former head of the Free Market Foundation, to get his input on where all of this might be going.
Now, currently, there is a great deal of tension between Afrikaners and the African National Congress. They held talks this week. Where do you see this going?
It's very unfortunate. I don't see it going anywhere. I think that, unfortunately, this thing has required this business of race, you know, expropriation without compensation, applies to all property, everything, shares, personal belongings, cars, houses, everything. But in reality, everyone thinks of it as being about white Afrikaans farmers. This is really what it's all about. So it has this unfortunate racial and language connotation and undercurrent, and it's very ugly and it's very counterproductive and unpleasant. And when the Afrikaner organizations, who are really excellent people with excellent policies, but when they engage in this fight, they seem to me to be acting counterproductively. What you want to say is not, don't take our land away without compensation. What you want to do is say, this is what land policy you should have. Do this, do the following. Propose recommendations as opposed to opposing what's wrong, recommend what's right. And that has always been my approach. It was Anton Rupert's approach, and that will be the approach that will work. And I hope that this business of racializing it and language, the Afrikaner versus sort of become white Afrikaners versus black South Africans. And white Afrikaners are, by the way, a minority of Afrikaners. the majority of Afrikaners are colored Afrikaners. And people don't seem to understand most Afrikaners are not white. So when we talk about Afrikaners, this idea that it's white people is simply statistically and factually wrong. And it's very unfortunate. I don't see it going away. I see it being ugly. I see it ending up in the Constitutional Court, in time-wasting, money-wasting constitutional challenges. Personally, I doubt that any real expropriation without compensation will ever happen in South Africa against white commercial Afrikaans farmers. I do need to point out that expropriation without compensation takes place constantly all the time and has done for a long time, and the people whose property is expropriated are not whites. It's black people. Black people who don't have land title, and when a city council wants to widen a road or build a clinic or have a park or something, they simply expropriate the land of black people who don't have title deeds, poorest of the poor. They can't defend themselves in court the way a rich white person could and would. And so their land is taken literally by the thousand without compensation. The victims of this are black people, not white people. And I doubt that it will ever be white people. They will try a few, and they will be so tied up in the Constitutional Court for years and years and years, that'll be the end of it. It will just have been some kind of weird, bizarre, perverse memory, and we will have so what will happen is they'll just carry on expropriating without compensation the land of poor black people by the thousand, and nobody ever talks about it, which is, in my view, a terrible tragedy.
Talking common sense again, Leon Lowe. And well, we'll be following that story as it goes through. I promised you some insights on investments and maybe a couple of stocks to consider investing in. Here's the first of them, not the one on the screen right now. Boxer's financial results came out today, earlier this morning. It's the first set of financials as a listed entity. Turnover was up 13%. Profits were up 10%. Very good when you consider that South Africa's inflation rates around, well, under half of their profit growth. Both were in line with guidance ahead of the listing of Boxer on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange last November. Shares were sold to the public at 54 Rand. As you can see, the share price has done very well since then. 67 Rand 38 is the last price there. And this actually improves significantly the value of Pick and Pay stores. Pick and Pay sold off 40% of its stake in Boxer to raise capital to repay a lot of debt. Its holding in Boxer of 60% is today worth 19 billion Rand. Boxer's market cap is 31 billion Rand. So 60% of that, what Pick and Pay owns, is 19 billion Rand. As you are maybe aware, or you can pick up from the graphic on screen, Pick and Pay's market capitalization is under 21 billion Rand. So you can buy the whole of Pick and Pay for what it owns in Boxer plus 2 billion Rand, which is, well, 2 billion is a lot of money for you and I. But I can tell you in the investment world, that is cheaper than chips. So Pick and Pay, what investors are saying is, will Sean Summers be able to turn it around? Not that certain at the moment. They are putting a very low value on Pick and Pay itself. But if Sean does turn it around, well, that 2 billion Rand value is going to be multiples of it. And that's what is keeping the Pick and Pay bulls terribly excited. We are among them because Pick and Pay is, in fact, in the BizNews portfolios. Another part of investing, and a stock that we used to own in the portfolios, Netflix, which has really been surging, is now pretty much out of sight as far as most media companies are concerned. The share price has doubled over the past couple of years and seems to be hitting new highs all the time. But one that you might consider looking at is Disney. Our partners at the Financial Times of London took a close look at what happened in the financial results from Disney that came out last week. And just to put it again into perspective, Disney is worth about 40% of Netflix. It makes about 60% of Netflix's profit. And it's a turnaround situation, whereas Netflix is really at peak performance right now. So let's get into a little more of this with the FT News Briefing host, Kasia Bersalian, who spoke to the FT's LA Bureau Chief, Christopher Grimes.
So Disney, it turns out, had a really good quarter. Investors have been a little bit nervous about them for several months for a lot of different reasons. But the streaming business did really well, in part because they had raised prices for Disney Plus and Hulu. The theme parks did really well, which was a surprise to a lot of investors because people have been tightening their belts. There's been a lot of concerns about consumer spending. So it was an interesting counter narrative to what we've been hearing and worrying about.
But like you mentioned, all of this kind of came as a surprise. So take a step back for a minute and tell me why that is.
Disney stock has been under pressure for months and months now. It was down 17% going into this report last week. One of the big problems for Disney is that they are being compared to Netflix all the time, right? So Netflix has been on fire for the last 2 years, and their advertising business and streaming has been going great. They've been adding tons of subscribers, despite, you know, being a pretty mature service now. If you're a media investor and you're trying to decide where you want to put your money, people have been putting it in Netflix. And the reason that Disney has looked not so great is that they still have legacy TV assets. And every quarter, things get worse for TV, right? The question for Disney has been, can the other parts of the business, from streaming and theme parks and its movie business, for instance, can that make up for the loss of the old TV revenue?
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. How is Disney Chief Executive Bob Iger looking to capitalize on last week's good news from the earnings report?
Well, Iger, when he returned from his brief retirement, I think he looked at the whole portfolio of businesses that Disney has, and he decided to make a really big bet on the experiences business. That means theme parks and it means cruise ships. And he committed $60 billion over the next 10 years to build out that theme park business. That was in 2023 when he made that announcement. It's a ton of money. They're expanding in California, they're expanding in Florida, and now they've announced for the first time a theme park in the Middle East, in Abu Dhabi. And for Disney to make a decision about a new theme park, this is like building a battleship for the Navy or a new space shuttle for NASA. So it's a big moment and it's a big decision for Disney, one that they don't take lightly.
Okay, so the plan is to double down on the Magic Kingdom. But Disney, at its heart, like you were talking about, is a media company. So I guess I'm wondering, will it ever be able to catch up to Netflix?
So as we talked about, the streaming business did really well for Disney. It made me think, looking at the numbers, Netflix in the last quarter of last year added 19 million subscribers in a quarter. Disney Plus added 2.5 million new customers, and Hulu added 1.4 million new customers. And that's good. But you think about that Netflix 19 million number, it's crazy. And I think Disney can compete with Netflix in a broad sense in that it's a diversified company with lots of great businesses, but it's tough. Netflix is so far ahead that it's hard to see any of the old line media companies really catching up.
Christopher Grimes, the LA correspondent of the Financial Times, he's giving us some useful insights there. I promised you some more investment insights, and this is from another stock in the BizNews portfolio, Apple. We heard bad news about Apple last week, but here's some good news.
Finally, well, those Meta Ray-Bans are going to have some competition, but it'll take a couple of years.
That's the big news here. The Meta smart glasses will have some competition from Apple. Apple has been working on glasses projects for some time, including glasses without augmented reality like the Metas and glasses with augmented reality. Those are coming further down the road. But you need a product to hold you over till then. They've seen the Metas are popular. They've seen that artificial intelligence is going to be a big part of hardware. So they're going down this road. And as they've done with other new product categories, they're developing a custom chip for these glasses. And this chip is based on the Apple Watch processor, right? It has special components in there to increase power efficiency, decrease power draw, and control multiple cameras that would be on the exterior right. of these glasses. And they would work like Meta's, where you can look at items and ask it for context using Siri.
Mark, generally speaking, this is consistent with Apple's strategy on custom silicon, right? Many of the processors across the range of devices are Apple's own, and I believe made by TSMC, fabricated by TSMC. Just explain Apple's footprint in that sense.
Yeah, the Apple footprint is that they have their own custom processors in basically every device they sell. They moved away from Intel in 2020 for the Mac. The Mac now has these high-end M-series processors. The Vision Pro and the iPad have the M-series processors at this point. The iPhone and the lower-end iPads have the A-series processors. They make their own chips for AirPods, for Apple Watches. And so, of course, they're going to do it for the glasses as well as a significant new product category within that Vision brand in all likelihood. And they use TSMC, like you said, for that final manufacturing, but much of the design is done in-house from Apple in their labs across Europe, across the United States. And they do have a license with ARM, and they use fundamental right. underlying technologies from ARM.
Well, that's some good news on Apple. So you've got a few stocks to go and look at. Disney, definitely. Pick and Pay, probably. Apple, who knows? They've been under a lot of pressure, and there's lots of negativity there. But it could be something that, well, we'll consider later. And then when it lists on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, if you're not able to participate yet in NASDAQ, why not ASP Isotopes? That's what we're here for, just to give you ideas. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews. Look forward to being back in your company very soon. And that means tomorrow. Till then, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.